Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia Jr. Thank you for joining us. And with me, as always, is the prairie to my little house, Jennifer Wollman. Hi, Jennifer. Say hi.
Hi. Oi, we'll see how we do. It's been kind of a laughy kind of day.
Uh-huh.
So in today's episode, we're doing kindergarten series, and the reason we're laughing is because I like to keep Fernando on his toes by surprising him on recording days by dropping the name of a book that he's never heard of before. So in today's kindergarten series, we're going to learn what the timeless book The Little House by Virginia Lee Burton, not Little House on the Prairie.
No.
By Laura Ingalls Wilder. So, The Little House by Virginia Lee Burton, what it can teach us about Miami-Dade and actually how most of Florida has grown. So, this book was first published in 1942 and was the recipient of the Caldecott Medal for Illustration in 1943. And I like this book because it does a pretty good job of describing urbanization of an area, the urbanization of an area. And I know when you first started watching it and the little sturdy house is going through all the seasons, you're like, what does this have to do with commercial real estate? And I said, well, just wait for the bulldozers.
Yeah.
And then Jessica went, oh no, there's bulldozers.
That's right.
So, yes.
She was on the edge of her seat.
So basically, the reason I thought of this book is because I've been going down to the Redland and Homestead a lot because we have a property listed down there for sale. And I've been talking to a lot of the city officials and people who live in both Redland and or Homestead to see what can happen in that area. Yeah. And how they can take a little bit of control over all of the development that's currently going on. If you go down US 1 starting in Palmetto Bay, but really in Cutler Bay all the way down US 1 south, you see all of the multifamily buildings that have been built ever since Miami-Dade kind of adopted and embraced their transportation-oriented development projects. And as you get closer and closer to Homestead, you start seeing where Lennar and D.H. Horton and everybody are building single family homes or townhomes, etc. So that got me thinking about The Little House, because she's a small, sturdy home that sits peacefully on a hill. Well, we don't have hills in Miami, but on a hill surrounded by nature. And over time, the world changes, the countryside turns into a town and then a city. And I thought it was funny because then she ends up being this one little house with all these buildings around her and an elevated train that looked just like Metro Rail, but older in front of it. So that got me thinking about how an area develops. You know, we've seen that happen here. There's actually several single family homes that are surrounded in different areas by larger buildings and commercial projects because they had that one holdout seller that didn't want to sell at the time. So that's why I thought of it.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the story does, I agree with you, do a very good job about understanding urbanization, especially, you know, based on the age of the book. It was, you know, definitely a big part of the conversation back then. But it's really interesting how within a couple of generations, the house goes from being in the countryside to now being in the middle of a very large and increasingly more dense city. One of the things that I found interesting is that the beginning of the change that the house experiences really starts with the building of the roads. Mm-hmm. And there's a really interesting dynamic about if you look at the history of urbanization in America and how it is related to when Eisenhower built the interstate highway system, right? And I remember seeing a presentation, this is early on in my career, by a couple of, urbanists, right? And it was really an interesting presentation about, what should be developed and what shouldn't be developed. And one of the stories that they mentioned is that they used to live in Pennsylvania. And once the interstate was built, before the interstate, he remembers that when they would go and visit his grandparents, that it would be a 4-hour car ride mm-hmm. to be able to visit. And that after the interstate was built, that got cut to about an hour and a half. Right, which was significant, and it added a lot of value to a lot of people and to be able to get around. And imagine about the reduction in the cost of transportation of goods, mm-hmm. right, when you have an interstate highway. However, he says that then the cities decided that they also wanted to pave the road. They lived at the end of a gravel road, right? And so the cities decided, well, we wanna connect that, for lack of a better term, last mile, right? And to have a road. And he says that, but it would take us about 4 minutes to get from our house to the main road of the city. When they paved that road, that basically only saved us, it went down to about a minute and a half. So it saved us like a minute and a half. But to the city, it created an incredible burden of cost of maintaining a road that really was not adding a lot of value. Because you weren't saving, it wasn't equitable to the time that you save and the efficiency of having an interstate system. And so he was speaking about how cities really have, created that. So that was the first thing that I noticed when I saw and when I read the book, or when I had the book read to me in YouTube and I saw the illustration. So that was the thing. And again, how important transportation is to the start and development of a city. A lot of people, when they look at commercial real estate and they look at investing, I often find that they are not looking always at the fundamentals. Like you've gotten these calls before from investors that are, maybe when the market gets a little saturated, when the prices are high, they don't find a lot of deals, they start looking elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they look outside of Florida, sometimes they look in places that they have probably never visited. Or for example, they'll look at a triple net deal in a place that has 5 years left. But what they fail to look is what are the fundamentals for the potential re-leasing of that space, right? When you're looking at the fundamentals, the economic fundamentals of a city, but also the infrastructure within the city, the ability for that city to grow, the demographics, the centers of employment within that area. Those fundamentals, it's very interesting how in the book, they kind of start adding all of those elements that lead to the growth of the city. Until you get to a point where now the little house is surrounded by, 30 plus story buildings.
Right. It was that one seller who didn't want to sell the developers that stayed there because he had a good house and I want more money.
And it's really interesting that you mentioned that because, I have a book here.
Oh, so I have a book. I was pulling up a stack of books with the flamingo on it for those people who
can't see. But and I'm sorry that I stepped away from the mic, but I want to just tell you. So we had a deal where we were trying to buy this property, and all the other parcels around it were already sold. We were having a hard time getting the seller to recognize the value of being able to get more than the market value of the property and being able to walk away. And somebody had, mentioned this book. So I go online, and it's one of these things where it's rare to find, but, I was able to find it. And it has all these pictures, mostly in New York City, of all the areas and all the places that were kind of, worked out. And there was a picture of a little house, just like the one in the book, that was basically surrounded these big, big buildings. It's really interesting how in the book, they touch upon so many things, right, that are related to real estate and to commercial real estate, which is why we always find it really interesting when we find in this kindergarten series, and we've said this before where, I'm sure many of you, when you were in kindergarten, saw that poster that says everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten. And it is so true. Some of these books are, their genius is in the simplicity of presenting something that sometimes we complicate. you know?
And the grown-up book, it's not a kindergarten book that Fernando is referencing. Right. Is called The Holdouts or what?
It's called Holdouts.
Holdouts.
The Buildings That Got in the Way. By Andrew Alpern and Seymour Durst.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But the funny thing is that we have one of those right in the plaza at Coral Gables.
Right.
It's
true.
It's like the heart of the plaza in Coral Gables is this one little holdout home. So, yeah.
By the way, I would love to own that house.
Yeah.
You know?
Talk about great amenities out of your goodness. Front door.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at first everybody thought that guy was crazy, but like, I'm like, hey, now man, you have your house. You walk out. You could grab a little coffee. You could get a sandwich You know? You got the Lowe's Hotel right across.
Right, it's so you really don't need super to have nice. House guests.
Yeah.
But we digress.
It would be an amazing Airbnb.
Exactly.
We do digress.
So going back to the little house, mm-hmm. I thought about it also because when I first moved to Miami over 34 years ago, so much of Miami-Dade was still agricultural there. Right. You know, I mean, we still have residential homes that have mangrove groves and avocado groves, but you would drive down 88th Street, Kendall Drive, and there would be U-Pick strawberry fields where the Home Depot is now on 88th and like 137th. That was all. There was an old Costco there, and behind that Costco was all strawberry fields. Wow. So I think about that because now that whole area, they haven't really changed 88th Street. I mean, they've repaved it and maybe widened it a little bit. But now that whole area is housing and retail and office space. And I thought that it was interesting because the Kendall area already had, because it was so close to Miami and Coral Gables, it already had the infrastructure for office and Baptist and everything else. But in the Homestead and Redland area, a lot of that is having to be built. In the Redland, almost everything is agricultural and it's zoned, you know, one home per 5 acres.
Right.
So zoning has to get changed and everything else. A lot of it's also outside the urban development boundary. But in Homestead itself, one of the conversations that we were having with the group is we were hearing what people would like to see, and they were using examples of downtowns in other parts of the country. And so I did one of the Tapestry reports saying, you know, what you guys are trying to do is put the cart before the horse because you're looking at, like, they want a Trader Joe's. I'm like, you guys don't have the Trader Joe demographic. I mean, I get that a lot of people drive up from the Keys to the Trader Joe's in Pinecrest because I see them with their coolers and everything. Yeah, or when they're heading down for the weekend, they go by there. But so we started looking at, well, what sources of employment could there be? You know, they've got the Air Force base. What could be, they've got their own electrical company. What could be built down there that would be a source of employment? So I thought that was really interesting, but I see you're now off onto the building book.
I completely understand. And I think the question is what comes first, right? Like in the story of the book, you know, it was really the roads that began that transformation, you know, and really the urban development throughout the United States, you can connect to the roads. But then the road to where, right?
Right.
The idea is that now you need industry to move in. You need employment. You need to create large centers of employment. And then as people begin to come in, then new industries are formed, right? Because you need to grow in order to provide for everyone who now is in the place, which is where now you see all of that incredible development around. And one of the things that was really interesting in the book that it repeats is as the development is coming in, what the little house notices is that everybody's moving faster. Everything is moving faster and everything picks up speed, which is why people, when they look at living in the country versus living in the city, that's the number one thing. That is the speed of, it seems a little it's a little ironic that you live in a place that is highly dense. You have a lot of amenities. You have a lot of expediency, right? Transportation, all those things. But instead of moving slower, you actually speed up with the speed of what's available in front of you.
Right. And Homestead is being very intentional with their growth. Like, they know what they don't want to be. You and I have spoken about this before, that almost as important of knowing who you are and what you want to be, it's more important to know who you aren't and what you don't want to become. And they said, look, we love downtown Dadeland for the hustle, the bustle, all of the activity, but we don't want that in Homestead. We want to preserve our agricultural character, our slower pace of life, to your point. We just want to have more for the people who live there.
Well, it's also like the people in horse country.
Right.
Right. There's a segment in Miami, you know, that we know as horse country because there are a lot of horses, you know, out there. And but it's one of those where the people in that community feel that, you know, they've already, even though they are in a major thoroughfare, right, and mm-hmm. that it could definitely be redeveloped into commercial. And there are mechanisms in which they have flexibility within the zoning to be able to do that. But the residents of that say, well, we've already given up big chunks to allow for development, but now we kind of want to keep it the way it is.
Right.
And any stretch of the zoning code to allow for growth, including, for example, having a higher student count in some of the schools that are in the area, you know, they're against, because right. they feel that every little bit of a stretch is a step closer to living in a place where they don't want to live, you
correct.
Know,
and losing their way of life.
To losing their way of life, and in a way, it's a little gem of a place because they are in the city, but once you're in there, just based on the, you know, the requirement like a house per 5 acres, stuff mm-hmm. like that, it feels very different. So they have an enclave where the lifestyle is, you know, they're kind of getting the best of both worlds.
Right, because they're close to, and they're very close to a lot of retail hospitals, they're close to the turnpike, but they still have that country sense of living and space, and a lot of them have been very creative in turning some of their space into businesses, either horse boarding or riding lessons or summer camps. But, you know, in it, the book talks about that, right? It talks about the push and pull of progress. And that is super prevalent in Miami-Dade as we've gone through this huge building boom, even more so in the last 5 to 10 years than in the last 34. And it points out that, you know, with growth comes opportunity for businesses and housing and building community, et cetera. But it also brings the challenges of planning and density, affordability, sustainability, and quality of life for the people who are already there. Great. And that made me think of the interview that we did with Tim Weishire, and he did a great job of relaying the story of progress. Remember when he spoke with that woman who went up to him and said, hey, you know, we don't want that here. What we want, we don't want more housing. What we want is a Target and a Trader Joe's and this. And he says, well, they're not going to come without more housing.
Right.
So, you know, I think that really does a good job of showing the push and pull of progress. Push and pull, that reminds me of another book. Did you ever read Dr. Doolittle with the Push Me, Pull You?
Dr. Doolittle, the one that speaks to the animals?
Yeah. There's a Push Me, Pull You, which is like a llama with two heads. No, okay. Anyway, I digress again, but it's like another one.
I think it's time to bring this down.
So anyway, that's what made me think of this house. And then the funny thing, there were so many things about this story that actually happened. So then at the end of the story, the granddaughter of the woman who used to live in the house in the countryside is walking by the street. She goes, oh my gosh, that looks like my grandma's house. And she moves it back out to the country somewhere, you know, somewhere further out, you know, from where the city is. And my nephew did that in Dallas. He had this, or he was actually in Fort Worth. He had this house that he loved. It wasn't historic, but it was a great house. But they'd outgrown it. So he couldn't bring himself to tear it down and rebuild. So there's a show out there about move this house or something like that.
Yeah.
And so he contacted them and they did a whole episode and they literally picked up the house and moved it to another area, and it was cheaper than building. So I thought that was really cool too.
Years ago, I remember, I've always loved the city of Savannah. It's beautiful. It's one of the first intentionally designed cities in the United States. you know, it has all these squares. It's just gorgeous. It's beautiful. My first time there, I saw this kind of information about these houses that were for sale. And basically, it was that the intent was preservation. They were gonna demolish these houses that had, you know, that were historically significant, and they were very, you know, they were strong. They had strong bones, you know, and they were of a certain era. And you could buy the house for a dollar as long as you were willing to go and pick it up.
And move it.
Yeah. And move it. It was really interesting. I went to the website and I saw, and this was early website time. So, you know, it looked like if you were reading like a little magazine, you know, but it was really interesting, the dynamic of that.
Well, and think about it now with the cost of construction, and I think about that all the time, because I think about all of these houses that are being torn down in Miami that are perfectly good houses, but they don't maximize the lot, or they're not what the buyer's looking for. And I'm like,
that's right.
There should be more people moving houses, right?
Oh, for sure. I'll tell you a perfect example, because the oldest construction in Miami is in the Little Havana. It's right by the river. You know, you have a boom in 1925s, but then in the 30s, they start building these beautiful bungalows, homes that are, you know, they have a porch, they have a crawl space, they're, you know, and... You know, I remember that we started to lose a lot of them, you know, a few years back. People were demolishing them. And what we noticed, they were demolishing them, and then it would stay as a vacant lot because they, you know, they got delayed in their building or for whatever reason. And one of the things that I found interesting is the, you know, we have a group, an organization within Miami-Dade County, the city of Miami, that basically does this historic preservation. Mm-hmm. And they got a grant and they renovated one of the bungalows. Is still there. It's gorgeous. And it basically is an office. Mm-hmm. They lease it out for companies, you know, as an office space. You know, they just wanted to show what you're able to do with the space. And man, I would tell you, be a great place to work, you know, and it, you know, it's beautiful. And the design and everything, I mean, it was, so I agree with you. I would love to have the ability to get one of those bungalows from down there and, yeah, you know, move it to another place and update it. I think it's wonderful. And in fact, there is another bungalow that was renovated by a private party. It's this lady who owns it. She runs an Airbnb out of the place. Can I tell you, it is very close to the Miami River. It's in Little Havana, and it is one of the highest rated Airbnb in all of Miami-Dade County, including the ones in Miami Beach. You know, so this is, you're not around the water or anything, but it is, hey, you know, year over year, one of the highest rated, most visited Airbnb in Miami-Dade County. So there you go.
So there you go. You can make a business out of it.
And you can make a business out of it.
The Village of Pinecrest did something similar with the Wilden Carrier Cottage. Uh-huh. It was one of the most historic homes, and they were trying to figure out what to do with it. And Pinecrest Gardens is like, we'll take it. And so now it's like they're welcome.
And it's really interesting because, I mean, for a book that was written in the 40s, to kind of be able to tell the entire story, including the holdout, building around a holdout, and then, you know, to get to the point where, okay, now we could actually move the house,
right?
You know, and now the house is back in the country, and, you know.
Oh, so you like my selection.
It's happening again.
Huh? So you like my selection.
Now. Absolutely, absolutely. I don't know how we're going to connect the Dr. Doolittle
and the two llamas.
All right.
But so I love this book, and I love Miami-Dade. It fits into this book so well, because whether you're seeking that quiet country space, or whether you want the hustle and bustle of the city, or whether you want the beach life or the golf course life or the horse life or the aviation, we have it all.
Can I tell you, I had a meeting in Miami Beach, and, you know, for those of you who know the city, you know, Miami Beach is, you know, quite a distance, especially with traffic, construction, everything that's going on. So it took me a while to get there. And every time I go to an area of Miami, where I go like, man, I don't visit this enough. And there are people that this is how they see Miami, only Miami Beach.
Right.
You know, and there are people that, you know, live in the urban core.
And the beach and blue waters. Yeah.
And so it really feels like we almost, because now increasingly we become a city of neighborhoods, right? And there is an interesting dynamic where there are people who live in, we all live in the city, we all live in Dade County, but we have very different experiences about what life here is, which is, you know, which is amazing. And it's to your point that you could live a very different kind of life. And it's kind of a big part of the charm.
Yeah. And you have access to all of it. I was speaking with a broker yesterday, and he was telling me how he lives on Sunset Drive, but his wife goes horseback riding every day before she goes to the office because it's a straight shot to horse country. And I'm like, that's crazy to think of when you live literally in such a big, you know, metropolitan area. So thank you for hanging out with us and visiting the little house on the hill.
Absolutely. I highly recommend that you read it, or even better, that it is read to you at 2x the speed through YouTube. So I'm not saying that that's what I did. I'm just saying that, you know, it's the option is there for you.
I suggested he did, but his ADD kicked in and he had to back to regular speed.
I had an anxiety attack just hearing people read so fast. Anyway, thank you guys for joining us, and thank you for continuing to listen to these two goofs ramble on and on about the things that we find interesting. We're going to post, I'm going to ask you if we could post like a little picture of some of these things in the book. I think it'll be cool for people to see it. All right, guys. Thank you very much. God bless.
Bye-bye.